SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone, 964, and at our website too, stevebick.com. When I tell you rainy, and I don't know if I recall 24 straight hours of rain in recent memory. Unbelievable. But you know what? We didn't have to race yesterday. So as a result, all it's going to do is make for a lusher, greener, more perfect pair of turf courses when racing resumes tomorrow. And it's supposed to get nice. So we may have dodged, you know, would have been a washout day yesterday for sure at Saratoga. So we'll reset and get ready for tomorrow, and that includes a couple of nice, as the week unfolds, a couple of nice stakes to look forward to. The Honorable Miss on Thursday, the first of the two Grade 1 jump races, the Smithwick. Conditions will be absolutely perfect for the jumpers. There's also the jump event tomorrow that opens the card. You got the Morrissey, you got the Curlin, and if you haven't looked at the Curlin yet, what a great bellwether for the three-year-old action. And as we talked yesterday, and as I'm sure it will continue to be discussed with the Jim Dandy being drawn tomorrow, after the results of the Haskell and knowing that Maximum Security is headed to Saratoga to train and ideally, if everything goes well, start in the Travers. Well, it seems like we're on a collision course for an absolute epic late summer three-year-old classic for the Travers. And we'll get a nice read coming out of this weekend as well as on Friday. I'll tell you about the Curlin. Andy will be with us in hour three today. And we'll see what he's got coming up for Thursday. And I think it includes Stanley Huff. Stanley sending out Global Campaign. And so far at the meet, Stan's horses, the Sagamore runners, look terrific. Global Campaign expected, and Tacitus, and War of Will, Tax. How about Laughing Fox with Steve Asmussen and the Lieblongs? That's your perspective. Jim Dandyfield, a couple of others rumored and bubbling up under the radar for the Curlin, you know, which sometimes comes up very narrow, but auditioning for the Travers, Intrepid Heart, Cairo Cat, Looking at Bikinis, who Chad Brown is very high on. Grump's Little Tot comes back. Service and Michael Dubb, Rowayton. We've got another service that I'm less familiar with, Direct Order. Endorsed from Kieran and Godolphin, Highest Honors. Back again for Chad, and Mogacha for Maya Engelhart. So a field of nine for the Curlin, and then probably eight or nine for the Jim Dandy. And it all will net down to a fascinating Travers that already, with Game Winner and Owendale seemingly, and obviously, Maximum Security, probably King for a Day, and on and on and on. Code of Honor. Everything you could want on the three-year-old front. So we'll get some thoughts. We'll also look at some of the card, the action with Andy Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We'll get a read from the first, I can't even call it the first full week, right? It turned out to be another four-day week because of the Saturday cancellation. So talk to Andy. Nick Zito is going to join us here early, too. And we got to get Nick on. We didn't get to him yesterday to talk about Mary Lou, but Nick's got a dentist appointment later with dentist to the industry, racing's official or unofficial oral surgeon and whatnot, Woody Prey, the office in Boston Spa, right downtown. And not only will Woody take care of your teeth, he's also got fabulous corn from his farm, and you can get corn. He makes sure that those choppers are in working order, so you can mow down ears of corn. It's one of the few hybrid farmers market / dentists available. It's kind of a throwback. You know, Woody has fabulous, beautiful cornfield out by his place, and he's got the corn bin right in front of the shop. Everybody goes. You know, if you go get your teeth done by Woody, they'll be guaranteed to be a trainer or two and their staffs in the waiting room every single time. There's people from downstate that went to Woody at some point and during a meet and then continued on, and even when the meet is over, they still come back up to Boston Spa to have Dr. Prey take care of them. So if you have a dental emergency while you're in town for the meet, Woody's your man. Pray, Woody Prey. All right. So there's an unsolicited dental recommendation for you. Speaking of drilling teeth, some of the news yesterday, there's always a tidbit or two, but the news that, of course, caught a lot of people's eyes, we were waiting for some official word from the state about what's going to happen with the rules that they have to publish regarding the pick six in New York. And Naira wants to experiment with a jackpot bet, and yeah, it looks like the final strokes on that execution is pretty much in place. And as early as August 7th, which would be, 2 weeks from tomorrow, would be the first day that they could introduce it. So that, considering that it's the start of the week and whatnot, that might be a date that you'll notice, and you should be aware that a 20-cent minimum. The way in which they're going to do this, everybody seems to do their own little nuance. This one would have 75% of the pools daily distributed to winners, and just 25% retained as a potential jackpot, accruing total. So we'll wait for further word from that. But for those that were wondering that, before the meet, this was becoming evident. And, of course, during Belmont weekend, they had experimented with the two-day pick six. And, they've always, ever since the advent of the jackpot concept, there's been speculation that a meet like Saratoga made sense for it, a short, something that's got a time stamp to it. So it feels like that is going to happen, and what that means long term and downstate to the $2 pick six, we don't know. And there's no, you know, obviously no decisions are going to be made immediately until they get a read on this. So that, I wanted to get that out there. And we also have not seen what the start, haven't seen what the start takeout is yet either on it. So we'll get that number. Today up in Canada, the Prince of Wales, second leg of the Canadian Triple Crown, 7:36 tonight. And Richard Baltus sends one bad boy, and he returns to the dirt. Tone broke, gets back on dirt. Last seen, before the Queen's Plate, was second, and a good second, to King for a day in the Sir Barton at Pimlico. So he's a macho man for Josie Carroll. She's also got Ivy's Flatter and then Skywire. So it really does feel like Baltus and Asmussen are the, are the confrontation pair to look to this evening. And one bad boy again, like he did in the plate, seems to have a very clear pace edge in terms of getting out there and establishing the lead. And whenever the decision gets made to press by whoever it's going to be, they're really, it's a little unclear. Tone Broke is taking the blinkers off. So suppose he's, more relaxed. I don't see who exactly runs with one bad boy. It just doesn't. The question simply is whether, whether the dirt inhibits him, right? I think there's only, that's the only way I can see him getting beat in here. And Tone Broke, who's got established dirt form, authentic established dirt form, is really the only one that, Avi's Flatter makes a dirt debut in here. He's a flatter, obviously. He's out of an Empire Maker mare. So, paper pedigree. Skywire caught slop at Gulfstream back in February and off the turf event. So, assuming that they're dry fast, take a look at the weather expectation out in Fort Erie. So I'll check into that when we get a first break. The rest of the lineup, Pete Fornatel, looking to move to, I hope I got this right, that he wanted to move to Tuesday from the Wednesday, which was fine with me. And Dick Powell's going to join us. And Dick wrote a really nice piece at Twin Spires, at the Twin Spires blog, about Mary Lou and about, again, much like we talked with Michael Veach, about what she did for Saratoga proper, what the city, and how much she elevated the profile of Saratoga and helped initiate what has been a new gilded age. I mean, for what has happened to this, to this town. Bill Downs, we'll check in with Bill and catch up with action at Indiana. And I've also got to reach out to Sean Clancy. Not only did I want to talk to Sean about the weekend and about the warm weather and how to respond to it and those kinds of things, but it is the first big week of jumping with tomorrow's opener and Thursday's grade one, AP Smithwick, tomorrow the Kaiser, who of course, Jonathan Kaiser, who Sean rode against and knew well, and that came up very good, as it happens. Bill Gallo putting together some very, very nice races here to start the jump season. So we'll talk about it with Sean when we get a hold of him. And I also need to get Dr. Alday in for a horse health. And I know I could probably go back in the annals and find a recording of when we discussed hot weather. And Dr. Alday laid out all the issues. You know, and granted, horses are, you know, they generally prefer the cooler weather. But it's not, you know, it's far from unreasonable to have horses, and they have for obviously for years and years. It's not the it's not the horses, it seems. It's the public reaction, and there's been or concern that is, I don't know, misplaced. Had a, actually on this topic, had extensive conversation last night. Al Gold had a lovely get together at his beautiful house. He and Hillary, and you know, a lot of familiar faces and personalities from the racetrack. You know, and one of the topics that is getting obviously plenty of play. Just the reprehensible behavior of the quote unquote protesters, screaming at children and intimidating children. I'm sure you've seen this. I mean, it's pathetic, just beyond comprehension. This feigned outrage and selective outrage, very, very strange. But it seems that that's our, a widespread condition right now in society. If you haven't, I don't know if I know that I think liked a, either liked or I responded to something. In Del Mar, you had the much more positive response where the industry, you know, the industry that group that Doug O'Neill has championed, with Oscar De La Torre, and you know, they were out in huge numbers and dwarfed the negative protesting. And it might be time, you know what, that might be time for us to organize the same kind of thing, where, you know, a supportive counter-protest like they've done at Del Mar. That's probably a good idea. And, you know, we talked to Nick Karras yesterday about Mary Lou, but Nick would be invaluable to, you know, to help with that. So that let's put that on the, put that on the agenda list as a counter protest. Yeah, I'm going to write that one up. With that one, we're writing down. All right. This is a free association idea session. Speaking of Nick, so we're going to get Nick Zito on, and because before Nick has to go see Woody and have his teeth done, Nick's going to be with us tomorrow, and looking forward to our Thursday, I should say. We've got the Unbridled Affair, CaptainCares.org. We still have about 15. I guess there's about we had a meeting organization meeting yesterday, and there's about 15 seats remaining. To sell out. There are about 260 people already and got about room for 275. So CaptainCares.org, come join us. We're going to celebrate a rerun, Lisa Malloy being honored, and the focus, certainly Shug McGahee and Easy Goer, the 30th anniversary of the summer of Easy Goer. Nick Zito joins us, and Nick, you know, one of the voices we had to have visit to talk about Mary Lou Whitney and Nick enjoyed such a successful run with the Mary Lou and was instrumental in, you know, elevating the racing portion after Mary Lou had reacquired stock. Nick, good morning. Obviously,
morning,
yeah, the tributes continue to pour in, and you joined us on TV Sunday yesterday, a service in town for Mary Lou that was, you know, kind of an intimate intimate get together. Your thoughts here on Mary Lou's passing?
Well, I think, like you say, it's amazing. It's I guess she passed on Friday, and it keeps, like you say, they keep paying tribute to her, and rightfully so. She's a great lady, and I'm kind of glad, you know, private means private, so that was good. And I hope that went well. And everybody that was affiliated with her and everybody that knew her, your guest and everybody else have been saying the last, you know, few days. It is kind of, you know, it's funny. I was celebrating her, Steve, on Friday. I ran into Tim Wilkin, and he was very friendly with her. And he kind of, you know, I was kind of in the soul, kind of like I am this morning. And he kind of got me out of it, because we should celebrate her life. Because if you look the way she if you looked at how she handled herself and handled her life, it really was like a celebration all the time. You know, when she came in, you know, it's hard to believe you get a 93-year-old rock star today. But she kind of was that way. You know, wherever she went, she drew a crowd. Or she said, there's Mary Lou, there's Mary Lou. So there was something about her. But she was a kind lady. And, you know, for me, most people know I was very close to the family. And it was very, very good for me these years. I was very blessed. And I kind of always felt that she was always looking out for me. And my conversations with her were just, you know, just tremendous and delightful and just outstanding. And very knowledgeable horsewoman, too. A lot of people didn't realize that. But don't forget, you know, you see where she came from. And she had a long background. And, you know, C.B. Whitney, obviously, was her, you know, was her husband. And was John came along later, who did a great job with her, and they did a great job together. So that was great. She has a history of horses, and very knowledgeable, and very good about everything in the game. And I'm not actually, because now I know it's kind of like she's actually going to be remembered for good now. Where, I mean, they're gonna, obviously she's going to be laid to rest, and I think it's really hitting me a little bit harder today than it has the last couple of days. So I kind of am a little funny that way today. But she'll live long. You know, her life's legacy will live a long way, Steve. And what she brought to the table was amazing. And I tell everybody, when she first passed, I told everybody, you know, I'll say it again. Most people, they die, you know, she was a great guy or a great woman or this and that. With her, it was all true. And I'm sad about it, but I'm very, you know, grateful to know her. But all the things about her were all true. So she was great. She was wonderful. And just a great lady.
Nick, bring us back to the Oak season and the Acorn win and everything that happened with Birdtown, because when she got, it was a Dear Birdie, and you know, she had actively, you know, there was that period of inactivity because Sonny had, you know, kind of liquidated, thinking that it would be a burden to her to run the racing side. And, you know, in obviously it's a different era, but, you know, the way Barbara Banky actually, you know, went on with it after Jess Jackson passed, and in a lot of ways Barbara has even widened Stone Street's activities. Mary Lou didn't necessarily, you know, widen things and make it bigger. I mean, you know, some of the physical properties that they had owned, you know, were you know, think about Gainesway and so forth, and Greentree and you know, the different properties. But she went out and actively, she took a certain portion of money, and she wanted to reacquire Whitney Stock and went out and got broodmares. And a lot of this was on her own. I mean, this, things that she had really picked up on. I mean, she had to be a very savvy, you know, listener and a bit of a sponge to soak in some of the lessons, because she really did a brilliant job.
That was explained brilliantly. That was absolutely true. You did that tremendously, because that's what she did. She went out there. She saw that Whitney blood. I think a few of the so-called consultants at the time may have laughed at her when she went and got that dear birdie. But as they say, the rest is history. And I remember talking to John about it when he asked me about it. I said, you know, it's a great idea because, you know, that blood, they live forever. And you know how successful I was at the sale over the years. And it's funny because I was thinking, remember S.S. Stone? I won that skip away. I remember I was at a sale, and I said, what is this thing doing in here? And it was Whitney blood. You know, like all the great outfits, you have to sell one or two of them. And I knew it was Whitney blood, and he turned out to be, you know, he won the skip away. So, I mean, everything they had in that family, if you go back and you see so many winners come out of there even today. So it was a great thing. And she was responsible for that. She went out and got that, you know, that mare. And what could I say? I was so happy and so grateful for her and Don, you know, to be part of history. You know, you can't duplicate that. I mean, there's you and I talked about the other day, 120,000 people at Belmont Park. That'll never happen. And maybe 30 million people watching, because Smarty Jones was, you know, the coronation was already proclaimed that he was going to win. And then to come back, you know, a few months later, and a couple of months, and almost 2 months, and win the Travers in spectacular fashion in that natural baseball, which I compared it to, like looking at the natural with the lightning and the thunder and the dark and everything. So that was really great for me. And I was obviously truly blessed to be part of that. But what a great lady. And and you know, like you said, Steve, the tributes just keep pouring in. And boy, I think Ian said it yesterday, the locals, is all true. I mean, the locals are just nuts about her. And you know, they'll just keep it up, I guess. So she's just paying tribute to a great lady. And a good horseman, too, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, good horsewoman. She was a rider herself. People all know that. We used to have conversations. She would tell me she was a little girl, and a lot of great memories, a lot of great stuff. I was very, very fortunate, you know, to obviously be close to her and John, her husband, John Hemmickson. I'm very, very fortunate. Probably one of the few that could actually say that. So.
Well, you won a Kentucky Oaks for her, and an Acorn, and a Travers, and a Belmont in one of the most famous races, certainly, you know, modern history.
A lot of people don't know. We're celebrating Easy Goer, right?
Yeah.
Thursday. Well, Birdstone won a race called the Champagne, the Belmont, and the Travers. I think Easy Goer won a race called the Champagne and the Belmont and Travers.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's your bad company, huh?
I love it. Absolutely right. I've had so many conversations. I talked to Mrs. Weber yesterday.
Great lady.
And, you know, Charlotte, I had asked Charlotte if she wanted to visit, and you know, she said she gave five. She was contacted by five different entities. She said on Friday, and I have nothing brilliant left to say. But we talked about her, and she, you know, Charlotte is certainly has come across a lot of. You know, people that from different walks of life, and she really was impressed and thought that there were so many qualities that, you know, Mary Lou had that, you know, that are tough to find these days. And you know, actually, I saw your quote, too, about how you would let her know that somebody, so-and-so had fallen and was hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Was in the hospital, and she would write write notes. She would go visit if it was possible. And, you know, she remembered people, you know, very readily and you know, had a lot of old world, you know, grace and qualities that really made her stand out. Very, very unique and obviously irreplaceable.
No question. And to this day, I would call John because obviously she was, you know, in a tough situation the last few years of her life, but they were always there. And it all came from her. John said, you know, always, you know, I'll talk to Mary Lou. I'm sure it would be okay. And boy, you know, they were both there. But it was recently, no matter who it is, any friends of mine that ever went there, she was there. And we've had so many, you know, things, almost tragic things that turned out wonderful. Years ago, a kid, Ray, worked for me. He works for Danny now, Bogdan. And he was seriously hurt. And boom, they were there immediately. Airlifted him to Hold Me Mad, brought him back, and all the best care for everybody. Maxine, she was, you know, she got hurt years ago. Jamie, my office manager, had a problem last year, terrible. She couldn't move her arm, you know, hands or something, whatever, you know, things. They're right there. So, geez, you know, the town, look, you know, it's funny. Everybody could be replaced, you know. Maybe not you, Steve, but everybody could be replaced, but I don't think they'll, she's like an irreplaceable person. Yeah. You brought up Charlotte. Charlotte's probably the closest thing, I think, if people knew her. People don't know Charlotte as well as Mary Lou, because kind of Charlotte stays in the background, but she has the same qualities. You're right.
Well, Nick, the game goes forward, people, I think of Bob Lewis, another,
you
know, that fits this bill.
Right.
You know, the game is always diminished when people of this magnitude and this dedication, that put. This has been a year. It's interesting. I'll make one final point. This has been a year where the word stewardship and being good stewards of the game has been tested because certain entities have been very poor and irresponsible stewards. People like Mary Lou Whitney, who, when given the opportunity to, you know, maintain a important part of racing history and breeding, she was a good steward when it came to the museum, to the Hall of Fame, which was fishtailing and in trouble. When it came to Naira in several different incantations, she would be very supportive, but she also would express displeasure. She was a good steward of the game and set
Absolutely.
A outstanding. I called her an exemplar the other day, and we need more good stewards, not people that are taking anything they can get from the game as if there's an unlimited supply of horse player goodwill and any other aspect. This losing her is a real opportunity to point out that we're all supposed to be stewards of the game and to try to leave it in better shape than we found it.
Well, that was amazing what you just said, and you know, I can't thank you enough, and I'm sure your listeners can't thank you enough, but that was quite a speech. That was almost like Jimmy Stewart goes to Washington. That was great. That was great.
You're the greatest.
That was great. Well,
I love it.
You know, I can't wait to see you Thursday.
Thanks, Nick.
Very thankful that be a social media captain, as you know, for your audience out there. It's a great cause, no matter what you give. You give $2, $5, $100, $10,000, doesn't matter. It's an amazing cause. I think a few years ago, I was lucky enough to be honored with Javier Castellano in the captain group.
That's right.
So I was very, very happy about that. It's a wonderful cause. And, Steve, you do a great job. I got to tell you, I got to give you credit. I told you, when you first started, I thought you were a renegade radio show. You're one of the best. I can't believe it. When you first started, I said, who's this renegade guy? But you're the best. You're the best.
You're too funny. I love you. Nick, yeah. The great.
All right, champ.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for the kind words. And thank you for that, you know, all kidding aside, that was amazing what you said. There should be more stewards. You stewardships, and that's what the word means. And instead of running to the courts all the time, we should be, like she would do, you know, amongst friends, talk it out and get the things done that's good for the racing and good for the game, not their personal needs. So great job, my friend, and I'll see you Thursday.
Nicky, thank you so much. Nick Zito, everybody. Zito Racing on your Twitter, and number one in your heart, Nick Zito. Hi. Let's take a break here. We're going to come. Nick's now he's got to go undergo some oral torture with with Woody. We're going to take a break. Dick Powell's going to join us. We'll catch up with Dick's thoughts on the week, as well as some Presque Isle action. And I told you, he wrote a nice piece about Mary Lou and how Saratoga itself has benefited from her largesse. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
All right, carry the four, plus this, I got that. All right. 26,876. What's that? That's how many races you could have bet last summer on ExpressBet. Haven't signed up for an account yet? What are you waiting for? On top of all those races, ExpressBet's given away 25 million XB rewards points with promotions at Saratoga, Del Mar, and more. Plus, ExpressBet's Fun in the Sun Handicapper Tournament features $120,000 in prizes, including seats to the 2020 Pegasus Betting Championship. I know, I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you here, but here's one more. 500. That's the sign-up bonus you could get when you sign up for ExpressBet. So let's recap. 26,000 races, $500 sign-up bonus, $120,000 handicapper tournament, and 25 million rewards points. Hey, this math just adds up. ExpressBet is your way to play this summer. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Well, this kind of cute had been sort of semi-retired in the rotation. Good job by Joe to pull out Kinda Cute, which was the theme for Glennie Kane Oakford. We adore Glennie, the mistress of the hounds, and you know, for so many years, our sales reporter and bloodstock consultant. And when Glennie finally retired, and don't remove it, Joe. I love it. Don't take Kinda Cute out of the stacks. But I just hadn't heard it in ages, and we would, Casey and I would save it for Glennie, and it would always make her giggle, because I would identify it as the Glennie Kane Oakford theme. That's pretty great. I love it. And then, of course, you know, we had Bloodstock originally, going back. Lauren Stitch was the original, you know, and Lauren, you know, Lauren, for those of you that wonder, Lauren is doing talent agent work. She's representing particularly young talent, TV, movies, commercials, whatever, and loving that. And then Glennie. Glennie was doing the sales, and then she doubled on Bloodstock. Then Sid. Now Sid Fernando for number, however many years now? Six years? I don't even know. Well, 7 years? I lost track. Dick Powell is standing by, and Dick, we got plenty to talk about, the Saratoga action and the crazy heat situation, which I didn't realize how far back it went, but 2006, I recall the cancellation. I was setting up the barbecue for the day, and Sonny Taylor came over and said, "Well, hey, they canceled." The last time, and I didn't realize it was that far back, but you wrote a really nice piece about Mary Lou that's at the Twin Spires blog. Good morning.
Yeah, I tried to give it, the theme of Saratoga Springs is health, history, and horses.
That's right.
And the history part is mostly horse racing, you know, who won this race and this year. But there was a history with the casinos and the spectacular growth of Saratoga. I mean, it's just hard to believe. You can walk down Broadway now, and in that lot, or a new two-story development, was a 1,000-room hotel. And there weren't 1,000-room hotels anywhere in the world. So the casinos were humongous. They were successful. Somehow along the line, the federal government cracked down on them, and also Hot Springs, Arkansas, which was same thing. You got help. You know, people go there for the springs, and bathing them, and people with tuberculosis and polio and things like that. And it was kind of a similar situation as Saratoga. Well, when the casinos were eventually closed here, racing was, you know, this was vacation land, but back then, it's hard to believe, but Belmont and Aqueduct were drawing 25,000 people a day. And to come up here to run before 15, and the expenses involved started getting to be a bit of an issue. There was even talk of running a lesser meet while the downstate was open, that downstate wouldn't close, they would keep racing, and they would run a lesser meet up here, and obviously that didn't happen. And then a couple of political people stepped forward and made sure that Saratoga was protected in terms of having 24 race days and things like that, and then obviously that grew. But the town itself came back because of Mrs. Whitney bringing in performing arts and bringing in top quality health care at Saratoga Hospital and bringing in the National Museum of Dance and donating a bunch of money to the YMCA. I mean, all YMCA in Saratoga, it's outrageous how good it is. And it wasn't just Mrs. Whitney, but she was always there. She was always one of the leaders. And it created a quality of life outside of racing that you could benefit from this, even if you weren't a racing fan. If you're Saratoga Hospital and you're recruiting doctors, it's tough to get high-quality doctors to come to a town with 30,000 people. But if you have good schools and you have all these other activities, not even counting racing, you got a chance. And our quality of life went up as she accomplished all these things, and it just kind of fed upon each other. But, I mean, there was a point where downtown Saratoga
would not look that much different than downtown Albany, downtown Troy, or downtown Schenectady. It wasn't like it is now.
No.
And through a lot of effort and a lot of people working together and stuff like that, it was brought back, and then the racing came back and thrived, and now it's just a complete opposite. Now we're the ones drawing 25,000 people in Aqueduct and Belmont, or not. She was, if you had to do a college study or whatever, who was responsible for this? It was Mary Lou Whitney.
No, she was.
And Nick and I were talking the other day, and what I mentioned to him, and he fully agreed, was she wasn't fully accepted when she married Sonny.
Right.
That this is one thing that always in my mind grounded her, that it wasn't open arms. She was an outsider. She married into money and all that, but none of that bothered her. She just had this dogged determination. But at the same time, people in town all have stories about, oh, yeah, I saw Mrs. Whitney here, and she remembered me. And just because Mrs. Whitney would stop and talk to people, and genuinely, not in some presidential campaign type thing where you just wave to people you don't even know. I mean, she was genuine. She was the real deal. And she will be missed.
Nice job, and you can read Dick's piece at the Twin Spires blog. And what you say about the town, I said on Sunday on TV, and I've mentioned many times that when I started coming here in the 70s, this town was threadbare and run down. There's no other description. And there were actually, there were some unpleasant issues that the town had to deal with. And I can recall by the, I'm going to guess this was the late 80s. I think I've told this story where I used to hang around in the carousel upstairs. And there was two or three couples from Rochester. And I struck up a conversation with them. And it was very funny because I overheard one of them say, they were talking about the concession items, and they said, oh, have you tried the custard? Meaning at that time, Carvel, I think, was still here. And so I knew right away they were from Rochester, because there's only like two parts of the country where they call soft ice cream custard anymore. And Rochester is one of them. And Minnesota, Wisconsin, they still call it frozen custard, because there's actual custard manufacturers like Culver's, and in Rochester, Abbott's famously is a frozen, actual frozen, old school frozen custard. So I said, you guys must be from Rochester. And they said, how do you? Oh my God! They're like, how do you know that? I said, oh, you have a Rochester accent. And they said, what's a Rochester accent? So I was kidding around, but it turned out that they were, two of them were retired Xerox execs, or Polaroid, or Kodak, or whatever the hell it was. I don't even remember.
Right.
I think Xerox. And I said to them, and they said that they had retired to Saratoga. They moved here from Rochester. I said, wait a minute. I said, say that again. You're living here year round. You retired here. And that's, Dick, when I knew, this must have been around 90, 92. And I said, that's when I sort of got it in my mind that if I was going to leave Canada, so this must have been in the 90s, that I would come to the area. And that was the first clue to me that something was happening in town, in the area, that people would come to. I said, what do you do all winter? Oh, there's Skidmore, there's events, there's this, there, you know, and I said, wow. And that really stuck in my mind, that the pendulum was swinging in the right direction.
And you could see it with restaurants. Wishing Well, those restaurants used to close for the winter, come back before racing season. And I'll tell people, like, still don't realize because they're not up here in the off season. Oh, no, you go out on Friday night, you better have a reservation. You're not getting in. And they're like, in January? Yes. Can't get parked, can't get in. slices a pack. And this whole image of racing would leave, and then the dust balls would come down Broadway and driving the city deserted. That hasn't been like that for 30, 40 years. And business community thrives, and I just give the credit, the most credit, to Mary Lou Whitney.
To Mary Lou.
And John. And I have a, Nick was talking about how they look after everybody. When I was in the hospital, the head doctor came to see me, wanted to make sure I was okay. Because Nick had told John, fix him in the hospital. Right? You know, and anything we can do, we're okay, and everything else.
Yeah, no. Like I said, the tributes coming from all over, and particularly right here, and you know, so many of the backdrops that were eerie, including being dark on Saturday, hours after the news of her passing, and also the women in racing exhibit opening the same the next day, and it just larger than life in a lot of different ways. Speaking of the cancellation, Dick, this circumstance and the folding in the Haskell and Monmouth's travail on Saturday and wanting to run, and I think everybody understands why they were wanting to get the card in. What's your thoughts on the way this all kind of came down and is being digested?
Well, in 2006, that was on a Wednesday.
Right.
And the day before, it was even hotter. I mean, yep. It was just bearable because Albany Law School has the law conference that I'm not an attorney, but Ben has me involved every year. And I was hosting a panel, and we went out to dinner, and I put a $100 bill on the table and said, they are not racing tomorrow. And no one would match it. And for the first time ever, they canceled whatever that day was in 2006. So now with the weather forecast from last week, around Wednesday, Thursday, you knew it was going to be bad. And once again, I offered to make a similar bet. I wanted 2-1 odds, but still. And I said, they're not racing. Just forget it. They're not racing. And I know horses race in the heat. I know it's possible, but I thought Naira not only did the right thing, but did it the right way by doing it soon enough that they just carried over Saturday's card into Sunday, added the jump race and the Chuvi, and had, kind of normal race day instead of all scattered and everything else. Monmouth had a big day, and of course they want to run, and of course they want to run the Haskell, and then those other tracks are closing. Number one, it puts a little more pressure on Monmouth to close, but on the other hand, it means, wow, we could have a huge day here. And Monmouth gets money from the state and the subsidy, and all the tracks in New Jersey get it. And it's kind of tied indirectly to the sports wagering, but they also have to have performance, and it would have been a big day to show, hey, we're up, and that's going to keep us up for the meet. So I understand Dennis Drazen's desire to race. I'm not a vet, and I don't know what's the breaking point. I wish we'd come up with something that just says when the heat index hits this, it's off. I did hear, and you were there, I wasn't, but I did hear on Saturday in the first race, they delayed it so long, one of the horses had to be scratched. Of course it is. And you see it when horses come back on a day like that, and it's brutally hot, and let's say there's a dead heat or there's a long inquiry. I mean, a good horseman is just going to take the horse and go back to the barn. Forget about the pictures, forget about all this other stuff. You got to get that horse back to the barn. And I know we got hoses and all sorts of ways of getting water to the horse and giving the alcohol rub on the face and stuff like that to lower their body temperature, but it is dangerous. It's brutally hard on the help. And so I think if Monmouth had to do it all over again, they would have had Plan B a little more public instead of kind of made up Saturday afternoon. And then people would know that. They either can show up late, they can do whatever they want to do in between. I guess the sports book did pretty good business that day, plus with air conditioning.
Which makes sense. And Dennis, you know, Dennis Drazen had said to me on said on Friday morning. He said we have as the backup that we can postpone or delay until late afternoon into the early evening, and we could run almost up till 9 o'clock. And he said that, and obviously that was in the back of their mind. Governor Murphy's involvement, certainly part of. The way things unfolded and the decision to basically cancel everything but the stakes. But I agree. I mean that ideally would have been, in a rebooted opportunity. Maybe you say we're going to start the card at 5 o'clock. We're going to run the 6 stakes and maybe. I don't know, maybe one or two other races, have an 8 race card starting at 5 o'clock, and let everybody plan ahead for that. Instead it put really a burden on their staff too. They were thoughtful by canceling on Sunday, knowing that their staff had been there virtually 18 hours on Saturday. So this is these are difficult a difficult era that we've entered, Dick. I guess that's the easiest way to acknowledge how these things are going to be handled.
Yeah, and some of it is good. Some of it, having scrutiny is not necessarily a bad thing. Sunshine is the best disinfectant, and as long as not being run by people screaming at kids walking into the track or whatever. That's just, I don't want to go there.
It says a lot about what these people are.
A couple of people have pointed out when Secretary won the Triple Crown how hot it was. Yes, it was, but you go back, I was there, go back and look at the films. The flag is stiff. There was not a breeze that day. It was windy that day, and it was hot. I mean, I was there with my shirt off down on the rail. It was a hot day, but the wind made it tolerable. And then there are other days. I thought last year, Labor Day, I thought should have been canceled. That was as hot as I've ever been at the racetrack. The humidity was just beyond belief. It was in the 90s. It was late in the year, so no one was expecting it to be like that. And it was just horrible how bad it was. I'm happy that no one got hurt and there was no heat stroke on any of the horses or anything like that, but there are days when it is bad, and we live upstate, and yesterday was 65 degrees all day.
Yeah, they've gotten to the 50s yesterday at a certain point. I mean, the temperature dropped 45 degrees. It's crazy. I'll only add one thing to those hot days, including that summer of 2006, which was rough. And there's always a rough stretch, and usually it is in July typically, or maybe early August. You mentioned Labor Day last year. Try working behind those 4 camp stoves that I used to have, and the steam table, Dick, that I had at the barbecue for those 15 years.
I can't imagine.
There was a summer. Tina shows. There's a picture. My late friend John Hubbard, who was the Colgate staff photographer, Hubbs took a picture of me. I got down to 155 pounds one summer, and I literally lost close to 20 pounds working behind the stove. I mean, it would just drip out of you, and you really didn't feel like eating. I mean, all you did was try to replace fluids, and you really weren't hungry, and
There's a picture where I'm as scrawny as skeletal as anybody's ever going to see me. It's pretty funny. In fact, the clothes were hanging off. I had a sport guy. There's a picture of me in a blazer. That I've been a 42 regular for years, and the thing is hanging on me like crazy.
Last summer, I spent 8 days in Saudi Arabia. And it was 116 degrees in Riyadh.
Wow.
And I don't want to hear about dry heat.
It's a dry heat. It's 120.
We were touring the track in a two-person golf cart. And while we're outside like 2-3 days. And a pickup truck would pull up next to us and be handing bottles of water. You never not have a bottle of water in your hands. And you're not even sweating or anything. It's just everything evaporating, and you got to keep replenishing. So what you do, my dad worked on ships his whole life. He worked in engineers. And once New York Times came to the Staten Island Ferry and took a picture of him and the guy he works with, and it's 135 degrees in the boiler. That's why they call it a boiler. And it was during this heat wave, and they were talking to people dealing with those kind of conditions. And the point my father and his friend made was, it's worse in January, because then it's still 135 degrees, but now we got to walk out to our car in the waterfront, and it's, 10 degrees. So, I don't know how people do it. I can't. I know that. I can't deal with that much heat and humidity.
It's tough for me, too. I've gotten better, actually, though. Some of the time I've spent in Florida has contributed to being a little bit more tolerant of the hot temperature. Dick, I've got Pete standing by, and he's got a 10:30 today that is going to make him a hard stop. So let's get our coverage in and catch up on Presque Isle real quick, and I'll bring Pete in at 10:10.
Well, last week was interesting because Pablo Morales made up a lot of ground. He had 7 winners on Sunday and Monday. So now this week, sure enough, on Sunday and Monday, Antonio Gallardo had 7 winners. Pablo only had 1. So Gallardo is now 10 ahead of Morales. He got 63. Morales has 53 with virtually the same amount of rides. And there's a jack that's kind of sneaking into the picture here, Wilbur Alencar. He had 3 wins this week, and he's at 17%. And the nice thing with him is he doesn't take money like Gallardo and the Morales do. So if you're looking for value, you might start looking at Wilbur Alencar. He did have a winner for leading trainer, Jerry Brooks.
Nice.
Jerry Brooks had 2 wins. Darian Rodriguez had 1. Teresa Conlon. No, Darian had 2. Teresa only had 1. So Brooks is 6 ahead of Connolly in the trainer battle. And I thought Teresa was catching up a little bit, but Brooks just keeps continuing to win race after race. Tonight we have a race card, as we always do. And a couple of interesting horses I want to talk about. Race 3. Let's turn to race 3. The 6 furlongs, the high class allowance, $40,000 purse, no condition. Good stake type horses showing up here, including Shang 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 for Wesley Ward.
Yep.
And now, just because Wesley's entered, that doesn't mean he's going to run. Wesley scratches at more races than anybody I've seen. I've heard Andy talk about that, and it's absolutely true. But Shang Shang Shang, winner of the Norfolk Stakes, Group 2 at Ascot last year, is entered in the 3rd race at Presque Isle. I'm going number 2. Susie's Stepping Out. It's a good, solid horse for course. Beat first-level allowance horses. Was 2nd in Fast Time behind a repeat winner. 2 starts back. There's this proclivity, maybe Sid Fernando could explain it, but something about two-step salsa and Presque Isle. I mean, it's a sire name that you see over and over again. And to me, it doesn't make any sense because he's by Passionville, who was by Seeking the Goal. So it's not a turf pedigree by any means. The dam of this one is by Officer. Once again, not a turf pedigree, but the two-step salsas just seem to do extraordinarily well at Presque Isle, and this is one at 9-2. could pull off the upset. I don't know if Wesley's going to come or not come. Larry Rivelli has a nice horse here in the favorite, number one, O'Keefe. We'll go with number two, Susie's stepping out in race number three. In race five, we're going to go six Felons again. I like the five. Everybody Loves Me from Rory Barron. Barron doesn't win a big percentage, but he does get in the money. Does get in the money at decent prices. I like the fact that this one made its Tapita debut last time out, and she was a real good second. I like horses that do well first time they try something, first time what track. Kind of shows some natural ability to do it. Battle from the Rail still was a game second at 5-2 odds. Back in against the same class level today, 9-2 with Willie Martinez. And in race six is an all favorite. Number four, Captain Saponis, 11-year-old son of Sligo Bay. Won two starts back here. So at the age of 11, he's still winning. He's won 14 times at Presque Isle. 16 other places. So 30 out of 37 starts in the money, $220,000 earning. Basically running against five claimers. And because Presque Isle is so kind on the horse's legs, this one at the age of eleven, is still running and running well. It was beating the nose last time out. Those were going two turns. This is two turns tonight. Mile and 70 draws in the middle with Antonio Gallardo and leading trainer Jerry Brooks. But this is one of the poster childs for Tapita, and our horses can stay sound and keep their careers going. Even at the bottom levels, you see these horses just keep winning and winning and winning. So Captain's upon us. Will be the horse for course tonight. Race six, number four.
Did you hear Michael Dickinson with me last week?
I did. I did go back and find it. And what did he refer to Prescott? He was making a point about Tapita 10 and how each version has gotten better. And he said Prescott was good. He didn't have anything bad to say about it. I know it was an early version of Tapita. Unlike Woodbine and stuff like that. But yes, I did hear Michael. And I do want to talk to him, and if he's coming up, I'll get together with him. If not, we share a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it got a big reception, and he's a fascinating, just a fascinating character. I hadn't talked to him in years, but it was well received. Let's say that.
What's great with Michael is he doesn't realize he's a character. Everything is authentic. I mean, John Wakefield tells a story about she'll have a cocktail party, people come over, and Michael's cordial and friendly, and 8 o'clock he's gone. He's in bed. Company or no company.
No, that's I've been around plenty of trainers that same thing. My bedtime, 9 o'clock, whatever it might be, whatever they're prescribed, however they have their schedule clocked. I hear it. Well, this is a nice. I'm glad you pointed out. Glad you pointed out, Captain Saponis. It was very cool. 11-year-old.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there that have won 12, 14, I think one's won 17.
Easy. He's got 19 wins. 19 wins.
It's just amazing how healthy and sound they stay by racing over that surface. And these are five claimers. We're not talking, super talented horses. We're talking horses towards the end of their career. Their career just keeps getting extended. So,
well. 5:25 post at Presque and Dick's Picks on the Presque Isle website, and really nice solid cards all through the rest of the week, tomorrow and Thursday, and the Pennsylvania Bred Allowance I'm just looking at on Wednesday, going as the third, mile and 70. A couple of names that are familiar, and Grand Motion shipping in. There's a couple of maiden races on the card tomorrow too, the second and the sixth. So, Presque Isle Downs. When your afternoon action winds down, Presque Isle just getting started.
Yep. All right, Steve. I will talk to you next week.
Dick, I appreciate it. Dick Powell, everybody. And again, read Dick's piece at Twin Spires at the Blog Roll. We'll stay right here because Pete Fornatel is standing by, and Pete has got to be wrapped up by 10:30. Bottom of the hour, we'll check in with Indiana's Bill Downs as well. But Pete, good morning.
Good morning to you. Yeah, no roller coaster rides today, Steve. I don't know if you saw that that image on social media. That's how I spent yesterday up here in Maine. Today we're going down to Portland, and my father-in-law has informed me that the bus leaves at 10:30. So it's
you got to jump aboard.
I woke up at 5 to get the day's worth of work done at by 10:30. Clear all the decks, and of course I can't even feel like I can't call it work coming on here with you. Always so much fun to catch up about everything going on in the world of racing and the contest world specifically.
Well, first of all, though, the roller coaster imagery, and I'm guessing you were at Old Orchard Beach.
It was Storyland here.
Oh,
in
nice.
It's actually New Hampshire, but very close to where Susan's family's place is in Stephen King country in western Maine, near the town, or in the town of Lovell. As we talk, I'm looking out on the lake, and it looks like the rain has stopped. But one of these old-timey amusement parks, they've redone it in a really nice way. The uncharitable way of describing it would be as a low-rent Disney World. The correct way of describing it is as a really fun place to spend a summer afternoon with the family. And in a way, a rainy Monday was perfect because it was like just light drizzle, so all the rides were open. There were no lines. My niece went on the roller coaster like 3 times in succession, and the whole experience took about 25 minutes. It was great.
Well, I'm going back to that. Where was that picture there it is. The hair.
My father of the year application. The G forces on little Perrin's face.
That is so great. It reminds me of one of those scenes from The Right Stuff when we're on those centrifugal when they've got them on those centrifugal machines. That should be your new background picture. It's hysterical.
Unfortunately, Perrin is not. She's unfortunately taken it as like it's a laughing at as opposed to a laughing with. I feel like as the parent who allowed this to happen, I'm the one folks should be laughing at. But it's made me. When you see Perrin, don't mention it. Let's put it that way.
All right. So when we buy her donut this year, we should say we'll avoid that topic.
Hey, want to go on the roller coaster?
You can make it up to her today when you're, depending on your agenda in Portland, take her to South Portland to Willard Scoops for ice cream.
Beautiful. Big ice cream fan. And we've been slowly trying to take a poll. You know, Saratoga has an impressive amount of ice cream places, and we've been going around trying to create a list of what her favorite is. She's really having trouble. She's having trouble splitting the hairs between the quality of the various establishments around. We'll mix it up today with a Portland ice cream shop. I love that. Give me that name one more time. I want to write that down.
Willard, and it's on Willard Street. Willard Scoops.
Willard Scoops. Done. Done and done.
Out of this world, right in South Portland. And it's actually in a really cute little neighborhood up on the hill. It's out of this world. The guy makes it right there in the shop, some cool flavors. You'll love it right away. It's a home run. Have you taken her out here to Greenwich to some Washington County options in ice cream?
No, we have not gone further. We haven't gone further than the lake yet. We'll get that run down, too, because I'm telling you, she's eager to handicap all the different ice cream joints and flavors and is not shy about telling you what her favorite is.
Well, you come out to what used to be known as Mann's Log Cabin, the Mann family, M-A-N-N. Then ultimately they sold, and it became the Ice Cream Man, but it was Mann's Log Cabin originally, and then morphed into Ice Cream Man. And it may be just a notch below what it was when I came to town 20 years ago, but it's absolutely terrific. And then you can keep going out towards Salem, and there's the Baton Kill Valley Milk People, and they've got their ice cream. And if you keep going into Vermont, you're right near the home of Wilcox, which is terrific as well. This is a very strong region from here to into Vermont.
It makes sense. All the dairy, right? I mean,
exactly.
there's clearly a correlation. So it's isn't just anecdote. There's some science behind this. And I think this is news the listeners can use. You got Dick talk to Presque Isle, and you win the money to go get the ice cream. Everybody wins.
Exactly. And ice cream is a favorite topic of mine. Everybody knows when we're out at Santa Anita, it's Fosselman's, and virtually everywhere we go, we find, I particularly like the hidden gems, like Willard Scoops. Believe me, you're going to be like, how did you find this? And I don't even remember how, but, whenever Tina and I would go, although we don't go as much anymore. I've said this. Seth sold the summer house out from under us. I'm very bitter. Seth Merrill, what's he doing? I told him the other day. I said, "Come on already."
Think of your needs? I mean, what's going on?
Exactly. I mean, come on. Luckily, Al Gold, after Al let us use his house a couple of summers ago when I went to Monmouth to broadcast, and Al said, "Where are you staying?" I said, "I haven't decided." He said, "Take our house." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Take our house. The house is sitting empty." He's living here 6 months a year and 6 months in Florida. And he had this house right by Monmouth sitting empty. So he gives us the house, and then he sells the house. But luckily he tells us he's building a condo complex with a partner. Al's in real estate and development. So he's building it. And he said, "Don't worry." He said, "All right, I'm building this, and I'll pencil you in for Haskell week from now on." So next year we'll be back. We'll be back in the Gold House. Back in the Gold Room.
It's important. These itinerant Gold Room, I love it. These itinerant racetrackers, folks don't realize it's not like just everyday people. You don't just have your house where you live. You have the whole circuit, and you've got ports along the way, and we get used to these things, and it's upsetting when the routine.
Exactly right. Well, Pete, we got about 15 minutes, so let's get some race conversation in and some coverage, and I guess we could start. I don't know if you want to start with my crazy Beat Dick online qualifier. Had a big turnout, and we're still waiting for some of the official numbers. I turned everybody back on Saturday, and then on Sunday we had a number of winners. I haven't gotten the tally yet.
Excellent. Well, that'll be, even though that's what you want to do. You don't want to do too well in your own challenge, right? You don't want to scare people away. This is such a fun opportunity for listeners and contest fans in general to participate and hopefully come out and join us in the NHC. And I want you to go over the rules one more time, Steve, for people. I think a lot of people, the contest nuts particularly, might be they tune into the segment or check it out on stevebick.com. What do you have to do? What do these folks do on Sunday to beat you to advance in this contest? And how does the process work from here?
Well, and I'm just looking for the what did I do with the, I had it sitting here on the desk, and very prominent with the Beat Bick headline. And all right, I'll have to go to the page. I had it printed out just for this occasion, and now, of course, when I need it,
I know
it's
how that
nowhere
goes.
To be. Here it is. Here it is. Beat Pick. Got it. All right. Saturdays and Sundays, there's going to be 15 qualifiers, feeders, essentially. And all you do is I pick a horse, and I'm going to try to concentrate on stakes opportunities, and certainly a great weekend coming up. To select, but all you do is you pick a horse. You can either go with me or you can pick against. And if I don't win and you win, you're qualified for the September final. There'll be, much like a lot of the feeder contests and some of the things we do like with Express Bet. You once you qualify, you're able to play in the big final, and that'll be like a 10 or 12 race contest on horseplayers.com. But those that qualify, those that, like the people that won Sunday that had Bombard, you, if you are not a tour member, you get to join for $1, Pete. $49 savings.
That's fantastic, actually. I mean, that's really, that's very
unusual.
Yeah,
I thought so.
Usually, before you start the process, you have to commit to getting in. So this is, and for folks who want to do it, you know, go ahead and you get access into free tournaments and things like that. But if you're coming at this sort of from the outside in, if you're coming to this as an At the Races listener or In the Money podcast listener who kind of wants to see what it's all about, here's a way, and there's seriously no risk to getting involved. And, you know, I should do it. It didn't occur to me. I've never, because I semi-cover this stuff still, I don't really think about playing in the NHC. But, I mean, for somebody like me, like, there's absolutely no risk. I mean, I'm assuming I'm eligible. Are guests, are regular guests on the show eligible to play in this thing?
I wouldn't see why not. I think the standard, you know, standard contest overwrap applies.
Yeah, I'm eligible to play in the event. I mean, it'd be something to be playing while being on the mic with you. It'd be a little distracting, but I'd you know, my priorities are straight: broadcaster first, contest player, you know, somewhere down the list. But I think I'm going to have to get involved in this. Where can people go to actually sign up to play?
It's ntra.com/beatpick. It's very simple, and you know, every. You know, Thursday, Friday leading in and into Saturday, I've been putting up a graphic that shows, you know, what I'm picking. And I have to wait until, obviously, to pick the race. I can't pick the races until Wednesday afternoon for Saturday and Thursday afternoon for Sunday, and, you know, until races are drawn. But we also are working on getting everybody free PPs as well to peruse. And I know that Holly Short and Michelle are working on a, you know, leaderboard, accumulative, et cetera, and place where everybody, you know, can check, their status. I guess some people forgot who they picked. So there's stuff like that. And they're working on that because we wanted to get started last week. And so some of the underpinnings are kind of building in underneath, this week.
I know you're insane during the summer, as we all are, but this is too good of an opportunity. I'm going to have to bother you to do some double duty after your show or at some point this summer to do a 5 to 10 minute segment for the other show, for the In the Money show, so we can make sure, you know, we'll talk about it on there too. But I really think this is just, I mean, I really think it's the best opportunity out there because it's very much skill-based, it's no risk, it's so much fun, and I just want to do everything I can between social media and my broadcasting arm to make sure that we get as many people involved. And if you're listening and you're not involved already, what are you waiting for, folks? Go to the NTRA site and sign up for this Beat Bick contest today.
Well, and I'll start to throw in, do a drawing, I don't know, 3 or 5 prizes a week for each day from the prize bin. I've got all kinds of racetrack materials that I have here on the shelf. So we'll also reward weekly winners weekly.
That's great.
As long as you beat me, you gotta beat me.
Of course, you gotta step up. But I love that idea. A good deal gets even better with that element of a weekly prize as well. We'll be talking about this more here and on the In the Money Players podcast as well throughout the summer. And it's going to be fun to have a Team Bick representative out there playing in the contest,
yes.
No matter how it goes down.
Yes, that part of it is going to be very fun to have somebody that, you know, the kind of a rooting interest and tie in. That'd be great. It's going to be great.
People love those experiential pieces that players have done from time to time. They get to, if you're not in it yourself, it's fun to live vicariously, and you can get a little bit of the contest fever too if it all works out right.
Well, and there's plenty of people who've already, I've already gotten some emails and some Facebook stuff and Twitter stuff. You know, saying that they want to be, you know, they want to be the representative. They want to have the,
the At the Races mantle to carry forward next February. And I just heard from Michelle. There'll be an email getting out this week. They're actually finishing up a conference in Las Vegas. And so she promised by the end of the week there'll be emails to everybody who registered and played with the scoring and with the specifics and who was a winner and so forth. So hang in there this week for that.
We can make some hay for sure with this. And I know that your listeners, because I've met so many of them around at Saratoga and elsewhere, like the listeners to our show, we consider ourselves a little community. And you'd have sure. pride in being able to represent that community at an event like the NHC for the honor of winning a contest like this. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Kudos to you and the NTRA for coming up with it.
Well, they've been threatening this for a couple of years. Keith has said to me, "We got to do an At the Races tie-in," and I'd say, "Oh, that'd be great." And he sent me a note and he said, "This is what we came up with." I said, "Great, let's go, let's run." So that's how it all happened. What about some of the formal? I saw Brian Skirka down at Monmouth this weekend, and of course, we've had any number of opportunities, and I know you were keeping tabs.
For sure. The big one last week that I was paying the most attention to was this LRF Cares Handicapping yeah. Challenge. I know you had Billy Koch on the show to talk about this one, and it was a success, a perfect teaser for the big Del Mar contest coming up this weekend. We had four winners last Saturday. Todd Cady was best of all, turning that bankroll into $6,210. And gets to keep that prize money, of course, and also wins an $8,000 entry into the Del Mar Handicapping Challenge. Sean Alvarez, who I believe is an At the Races listener, was second. 36.40 on the bankroll, wins that NHC entry, hotel and travel. He'll be out there in Vegas. I think he's coming to Saratoga soon, too. Number three, David Rink, a name we're seeing an awful lot of on leaderboards, high up on leaderboards in the last year or two, Keeneland, Pegasus. David Rink's name has been there. He'll be going to the NHC as a result of his $2,353 bankroll. And fourth, another name that's just been everywhere, I feel like, in the last 3 years of contest play, Dave Weaver, Mr. Ice Cold Exacta himself. $1,454.80 was the closing bankroll, and for that he wins a $750 entry into the Pacific Classic Betting Challenge. There's going to be a lot more Del Mar contest news based on this big two-day event, 8,000 to play. JK taking a couple of days off the Fox show. He'll be flying out there to play. It'll be a who's who of contest players, not just the very good local contingent in Southern California, but players coming in from around the country. If you're interested in playing, get in touch with Chris Barr at the Del Mar Thoroughbred Club, and I'm sure we'll be doing plenty of recapping of that event, both here on At the Races and over on the In the Money shows as well. Contest action just starting to heat up. Saratoga, they've been running these low rollers every week. Great way to cut your teeth. Then they've got the four-star Dave Challenge and the Saratoga Challenge coming up in just a couple weeks' time. We'll give out all the details on that as we get closer. Dominic Labetti, the man to reach out to if you want to play in those two separate Saratoga events.
Well, and Del Mar's challenge coming up on Saturday, 8 seats. This weekend, 27th, 28th, at Del Mar. That's the big, the big opportunity on site this weekend. And then the first week into August, you've got Penn National has got a nice on track coming up on August 3rd, two seats on Saturday. And Bally's itself with a qualifier, three seats on August 4th.
Lots of new opportunities. And cool to see Penn National getting back in the game, the place where the handicapping contest anyways originated. And, Harvey Pack gives credit to the Penn National one that he says he basically stole the idea and started running those NYRA contests back in the day. And, of course, the NHC clearly influenced as well by those. So good to see that name back in the contest world. I hadn't heard about that. So that's a very cool and worth following. And then Bally's, we've talked about a little bit, their commitment to getting involved in the contest world. There's stuff happening everywhere. NTRA.com, a great place if you're interested in playing in their event. Of course, the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, major event we're going to be talking about a lot more on upcoming podcasts. And if you go to breederscup.com/BCBC, you can look for a list of qualifiers for there. And then, of course, online contests, derbywars.com, horseplayers.com, lots of information out there. And I always am happy to give you guidance if you're new to the contest world or if you're just looking to shake things up. I'm happy to converse on social media and help point you in the right direction of what contest might suit your style. So hit me up on @loomsboldly if that's of interest to you.
Well, and finally, Pete, before you head off for a fun day of activity, when are you back? What's your schedule? What are you doing later in the week locally?
Thursday, I will be taking a bus back. This is going to be an adventure, Steve, but I did check. The bus has Wi-Fi, so I'll be playing the early part of the card on a bus from Portland to back to Saratoga. I'm hoping there's not 82 stops along the way. It looks like if all goes well, I'll be there for the end of the card. There were rumors, Marshall Graham rumored there might be some karaoke Thursday night. I might get dragged into that morass. And then work-wise, we'll have the regular podcast up, and then we'll be back with racing at Saratoga on Saturday. We'll be doing our live Naira Betts show from the Don Julio Bandstand. That's right by the Dunkin' Donuts at Saratoga, 9:30. So come early, watch the workouts, then roll out to the bandstand, and we'll be doing a show. I don't have JK this week because he'll be in Del Mar. So guest TBD, but I will be there. Maybe we'll see what Paul Matisse is up to Saturday morning, 9:30 to 10. And then if you can't make it there, that show should be posted on the In the Money Players podcast feed by about 10:10, 10:15. So lots of ways to get all the content on my end, and look forward to seeing you, Steve, and you all, the listeners, out there at Saratoga this weekend. I've got an up and back next week, too. I'm sticking around for the charity event. We've got on the 28th, there is the Gumbo for Horses event at Racing City Brewery. No, excuse me, that's on the 30th. The 28th is, speaking of karaoke, the PDJF karaoke right. event. Do you attend that? Are you a regular visitor to that?
I have not. I went. I don't know, several years ago, and I haven't gone back. But I think I've
gotten roped in. I think I'm roped in. I'm going to be doing something over there, so that'll be fun. So PDJF on Sunday, TRF on Tuesday, Gumbo for Horses. For information about that, trfinc.org/players. Then it's 2 days in the city, and then I'm up for real. And I can just take a deep breath and relax and enjoy the rest of the meet without all this running around. So that's my schedule, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, as we go, and I'll check with Sid tomorrow, but was everything okay? No, you didn't have any of the flooding in Brooklyn from what you hear at home?
I don't know yet. I texted my neighbors and bizarrely have not heard back. I don't know what that's about. No. We're up on a hill. We're up on 7th Avenue. We didn't flood during Sandy. So I'm feeling like we're drawing live to be okay, but I'm going to feel a lot better when the neighbor texts and says, basement's dry, everything's good, because I got a lot of records down there, Steve. We can't have any messing around.
No. Well, I hope, knock on wood. Sid, I saw where Sid took a picture, and he knows that his motorcycle is stored in a garage, and he hadn't gotten there yet to make sure everything was okay. I mean, the images were frightening. I mean, they were stunning. For those that didn't
that's
see
the bottom of the hill.
Wow.
Yeah, the images we saw were, I mean, you know, it's horrible for those people. And I'm not making light, but where I think Sid lives and where I live are up higher. So I'm hoping domicile wise will be okay, but hopefully his bike's all right. Hopefully all those people are okay and their possessions okay, because boy, that must have been some lashing of rain to produce images like that.
Yeah, no doubt. Pete Fornatel, everybody, looms boldly, and we'll look for Pete around the track and at the bandstand right there in the paddock square. And Pete, I have a pleasant rest of the stay in New Hampshire, Maine, and we'll see you probably Thursday late or over the weekend.
Willard Scoops, here I come.
Attaboy. Report back. Take a picture. And there's a really good little dog, a little pet shop next to it, too. So your pet needs can be addressed as well. Pete Fornatel, folks. Let's take the bottom of the hour break. Bill Downs going to join us when we come back. And in fact, Indiana has a nice three NHC seat on-site contest in August. Bring that up with Bill. And, of course, Caesars had a system-wide contest, right, 2 months ago, give or take, 6-8 weeks ago. So they're all in. And you may have I think you heard Hammer talk about with his new position at Oaklawn, and he had pitched them. He said, you guys you doing anything contest wise? And they said, we really haven't. Hammer's going to beat that drum, and maybe Oaklawn gets a series going. During their they got a perfect calendar for it. Granted, maybe a last chance in January. That might be a little late. I don't know. Let's take the bottom of the hour, 90 plus in, 90 to come. Bill Downs, Indiana Grand, when we come back.